Hear me okay? Is it okay? All right, my name is Peter Baldwin. I'm from Point Clark Networks. Here's the mandatory agenda. I'm gonna spend a lot more time on the introduction because most of you or all of you don't know who I am or what my company does or the product. So normally I'd only spend 30 seconds on my biography because that's all it's worth, really. Before I get into the biography, I want to talk about what this is about and some of the themes that are going to come out of this discussion. So Samba LDAP, I'm sure everyone knows probably more about Samba and LDAP than I do. So I'm not going to get into the technical details so much. the themes are, what we're designing here is for the small business market. So we're not talking enterprise, it's small business, or small organizations is like what we like to call it. So it could be like a not-for-profit or a non-governmental organization. And for that market, you have to keep it simple. So if you start talking about trust relationships or multiple PDCs or trees or anything like that, you know, you're gonna get that deer in the headlights look. It's gonna be too complex. And the other thing to think about is the opportunity. So, you know, Krishna is the next speaker is gonna be talking about things in the enterprise, Samba in the enterprise, Active Directory. Microsoft is very well entrenched in the Fortune 500 or the Global 2000 type of companies. And there's a reason for that. You know, they do provide some valuable pieces of software and solutions. But in this particular market, small organizations, and to a lesser extent, the developing world, they haven't bought into that Microsoft infrastructure yet. So this is really an opportunity for driving certain technologies into those markets that you don't have to worry about. You just don't have to worry about it in this market. When you're thinking about the enterprise, you have to be able to talk to Active Directory. You really do. And then the other thing I want to point out as a theme in this discussion is my background, and I'll get into it in my background, I'm data center centric. It's kind of a mouthful, or cloud centric. The virtualization and the data center is becoming more and more important, even in the small business market. So let's go talk about me. First of all, I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. So it's kind of scary. My job is basically to integrate basically a Linux distribution. So you know, I know all the different languages, Perl, C, C++, I've used them all. I'm not a subject matter expert on any of them. So I can talk about IP tables, I can talk about the SQL web proxy, I can talk about content filtering, I can talk about all sorts of different topics, but I know a little about a lot of things, which is kind of a dangerous thing. I gotta keep my job. So let's go back and look at my biography and how it flows into Samba, LDAP, small business, and how it's going to fit into this discussion. So I'm an electrical engineer, at least I was for 4 years, and that was back in 1990. Those are probably the only years I really practiced any kind of engineering. Right after that, I went into software development. So electrical engineering, I think today they would call it computer engineering. Back in the day, we had two streams. We called it the geek option, which is what I did. And that's where you learned about, you know, chips and gates and OR gates and all the way from down to the chip design all the way up to, high-level software design. And they also have what they call the toaster option. And the toaster option was kind of like the traditional electrical engineering where you learn about power lines and how you can push a train using electricity. So after that, I went to a company called EDS. I don't know if anyone's familiar with EDS. EDS actually doesn't exist anymore. They were bought by HP last year. EDS, they're a big company. They had 100,000 employees. And what they did was IT outsourcing. So the place where I worked at was the General Motors assembly plant, which is one of the casualties in the current financial mess. It won't exist in a few months' time. EDS's responsibility was really the backbone, everything in the data center, so everything above the backbone. So they would go into General Motors and they would take care of all the applications that run payroll, all the applications that run production, and all those types of things. And I guess you can call it cloud-centric. I mean, they call it the cloud today, but back then it was enterprise software. It ran in the data center. People used VT terminals or client server models. So this is where I really kind of started to think, oh, the data center. I started to live in the data center. I started to build applications that were data center centric. So they really lived in the servers in the data center, and you had a thin client out on a desktop or a VT terminal or something like that. After my time at EDS and General Motors, the next step, and it also comes into this talk and the themes, was some time in South Africa and Zimbabwe as well. So this is 1998, and at the time, this was in Zimbabwe. I helped a non-governmental organization move from a FidoNet. How many people know what FidoNet is? If you're under, see, only John. You have to be over the age of 35 to really know. But basically, it's kind of an old bulletin board kind of system. And they had it on a DOS-based system. And this is my first foray into Linux. And I helped this non-governmental organization move from DOS FidoNet to Linux FidoNet. And at the time, there was one 64K line going from Johannesburg to Harare that was serving pretty much the entire country of Zimbabwe. So that was a long time ago. It was fun. Those were fun times. That was kind of a moment in my life where I kind of saw a lot of opportunity in the IT world, especially in South Africa, where you really don't have, they haven't really bought into, of course, South Africa has lots of big companies, mining companies, but this, you know, the small business market, they really haven't bought into the Microsoft kind of technologies yet. It's kind of it's a new space, it's a green space. And then after that, I spent a couple years getting my business degree. I know that's probably a four-letter word these days, an MBA, but and that's somewhat well-deserved. But got the business degree. I learned quite a few things while there. And that'll take me into the company, and I'm going to talk about John in a couple more minutes. The one thing I wanted to add was, on my plane ride over, and I'm from Toronto, Canada, I was thinking, what am I going to talk about here? I mean, these guys are all Samba experts. I'm a jack of all trades. I mean, there's not much I could really teach you. Or I was trying to think, what kind of information can I give? And so I thought of the John F. Kennedy quote, ask not what Samba can do for you, ask what you can do for Samba. So I'm thinking, well, what can I do? What can I, Peter Baldwin or Point Clark Networks, do for Samba to kind of take it to the next level? And particularly, what can we do for Samba to get it into these small organizations? So in getting up to the year 2000, I founded Point Clark Networks with a friend of mine. Has anyone heard of like Clark Connect or Point Clark Networks? Nobody? So basically, like many startups, our big idea, our billion-dollar idea was, okay, we see all these devices coming out, web cameras, D-Link or Linksys routers, and all these little devices are going to have to talk back to some central location to do things, simple things like dynamic DNS, or in the case of web cameras, maybe image capture for offline. So that was our grand vision. And we did some of the dog and pony shows, and we ran into some people. There was one person in particular at Netgear who kind of took us under our wing, took us under his wing, and kind of gave us some advice on how do we approach that market. And so one of the things we did was invented Clark Connect. So Clark Connect is basically a server gateway system that lets you do a whole bunch of things, and I'll talk about it in a minute. And so we invented this free system, and the entire reason we invented it was to test our service delivery network. We never intended to productize it or do anything like that. We were just focused on the service delivery network. How do you get all these devices talking to a data center? So about a year or 2 years into it, Clark Connect was taking off, and we weren't getting anywhere with our service delivery network. We couldn't convince the Linksys or our Netgear to use our product, which is not a surprise. And of course, luckily we fell back into it and said, oh, hey, you know what? We're going to productize this Clark Connect. So Clark Connect today is basically Microsoft Small Business Server, but the Linux edition. So it's a piece of software that can provide multi-WAN features, content filter, antivirus, anti-spam, mail features, everything that a Microsoft Small Business Server can do, Clark Connect can do as well. So just to give you an idea, I don't want to make this into a product pitch because this is not the audience that would ever buy a Cloud Connector or use it. But here's a screenshot of what it is, so you can kind of get a better feel of what it does and how it's used. So when you get Cloud Connect, you download it, you take your CD, you put it into a server and install it, a very basic installer, and it installs the server-based system. You set up your networking using a basic networking tool. You don't have to worry about all the details. It's just kind of give you an idea of what it looks like. And then everything else is configured via a web interface. So it's a headless system. There's no X Windows or anything on the system. It's just basically a Linux server system with a web front end. So like I said, it has all sorts of different features. It's similar to Microsoft Small Business Server. The other thing we did that we like to point out is there's a software API. So no surprise, you know, we build a web-based system. We separated kind of the GUI portions of it from the kind of underlying engine. And that includes, you know, some Samba types of API calls. There's nothing too exciting about, this is just an example, there's nothing too exciting about our API, but basically it's a dumb API. So, you know, Samba get win server or Samba get win support, all it does is look at the Samba configuration file and return those values. But what it does for, you know, a developer is it lets you programmatically do things. And to give you an example, actually win server is a good example. In a small business environment, you're going to have your win server, you're going to have your DHCP server. So when you say, I'm going to set my win server and I'm going to turn, or win support, and I'm going to turn it on, the application developer can go into the API and say, hey, I'm going to check my DHCP server using the API. Does the DHCP server have the win server setting enabled? Yes or no? And so you can do some of these sanity checks to make it easier to make sure that the small business user who's not particularly an advanced user has configured the system as best as he or she can. So that's, I'll take a couple steps back, that's kind of who I am, what the company does, and what the product does. And now I'm going to move into where we're moving forward to next. So with the current product, is version 4.3 out there, has very, very, very basic file and print services. So along with all the other features, file and print with Samba is pretty rudimentary. Very rudimentary and half broken. So we really wanted to take it to the next level. And so what's the opportunity and scope for Samba and the small business? So just to reiterate, it's not for the enterprise. So we don't have to worry about a whole bunch of things. We just don't have to. It's really an opportunity for Samba and for us. And I mean, it's our job, not the Samba team's job, to go into the small organization and say, well, what can we do to help you do your business or do your job or do it right? As Microsoft software is not entrenched. Innovation, this is something that I thought of on the plane, and Dirk mentioned it this morning. It's very easy for us to get tied up in some of the day-to-day feature sets, so remote backup or file and print. It's really hard to step back sometimes and go, what can I do to innovate? And you know, some of the things that came to mind, I had a meeting, a company-wide meeting, a couple months ago, and there were 10 of us sitting around a table. And one of the exercises was to build some documents. You know, doing we had to build some documents. And at that point, we had to also share the documents. And so what did we end up doing? You know, we got USB keys going out, people are trying to send email attachments and firing it across the network, and it was unbelievable. And there's an opportunity there to innovate where you're just a small business environment, some kind of ad hoc network. What can you do to really enhance that kind of small business environment? I mean, that's pie in the sky kind of thing. But I sometimes forget, as I'm doing the day-to-day chores and doing the day-to-day feature sets for the product, that there really is a plenty of opportunity to really do some cool and innovative stuff. So hopefully, in the next year or two, we'll be able to do that. Something. Knock on wood. So I'm going to go through kind of a typical situation that we have in as that we have to think about when we roll out a Samba LDAP solution for small business. So I'm going to use an example of a software company, not too different from what we have for Point Clark Networks. So we have a head office in Boston. We have an R&D office in Toronto, which is where I live. We have a data center. We're a data-centric kind of company. We also have a field office in the Maldives. We don't really have a field office in the Maldives. We would like to have a field office in the Maldives, but we don't. And then we have something called a GeekX house. So GeekX house is basically, a lot of you probably have a lot of infrastructure in your house for doing all sorts of, you know, technical stuff. You know, I thought I had a pretty good piece of infrastructure. I have like a big server sitting in the basement with quad CPUs and RAID 5 array, and I have another system that's Myth TV, personal video recorder. And then I talked to John about his house, and he's got a serious amount of infrastructure at his house, and another developer has, you know, a lot of other infrastructure. And what I'm trying to get at, there's pieces of that infrastructure, because I do some work at home, that really should play into somehow this environment, this office environment, because there are files and things on that system at my house, or VPN, that I really need to work. So this graph, it says storage, and backup, oh my. So this graph, this data on this graph is totally meaningless. I just made it up and I couldn't find a source of it. What I'm trying to get at here is storage is really growing at an incredible rate. There's data everywhere and people are storing data at huge amounts of volumes. So one of the things that you might think of, if you have a small office and if you're a data-centric kind of company, you want to put pretty much all your data in the data center and don't worry about anything else. So everyone's going to have their kind of remote shares sitting in the data center, and there's going to be no files at all at the office locations. And if you had really high-speed networks, you can get away with that. But we don't. So the other problem is, of course, we don't have high-speed, at least in Canada. I know in Sweden and other places there are high-speed networks. But to give you an example, you know, I have a Myth TV system, which is a digital video recorder, kind of like a TiVo. And every high-definition TV stream requires about 20 megabits per second. And you might be recording two high-definition TV recordings at the same time and watching a video. So you might need as much as 60 megabits, just, you know, a casual user. And those kinds of speeds don't exist. So you're living in a place, and I also have examples of the Maldives. Now, even though we don't have an office in the Maldives, we do have a client in the Maldives. And the client has this beautiful resort on an island, and he put in a Clark Connect system. They have, you know, we offered free technical support, on-site technical support, but they didn't buy it. But they're, of course, very, very cognizant of bandwidth costs, and they want to cache as much as possible. So we were on the phone with them, and we were trying to figure out, well, how do we cache data for them? So at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say, when you go back to this, here we have our offices and this house. There's data everywhere. And everyone has a different type of network. It might be a high-speed network, it might be a low-speed network, or it might be an unreliable network. So the other requirement is you gotta keep it simple. And you don't have to see the details of this. Here's Microsoft Small Business Server 2003, and I use them just as an example because it's a good one. So I don't know if anyone's ever used this product before, but when you open it up, and you can tell what Microsoft was trying to do. They were taking a complex product, their Windows Server product, and they put all the tools in one place, and they put it into this console. And in this console, you can pretty much do everything that you need to do. And it's clever in that way, but it's just overwhelming, and it's complex. And that was probably the biggest criticism for this product. It's just way too complex. You know, when I first opened up Microsoft Small Business Server, and I'm in this field, and this is what I do, I was just blown away by its complexity. To Microsoft's credit, on their next iteration, Microsoft Small Business Server 2008, they did a really good job of taking out all the unnecessary things and making a nice, clean interface in terms of providing what does a small business server or a small business user really need to do. So this is another requirement. You got to keep it simple. So this is a summary of the issues. We have data all over the place of our software company. We have data all over the place. We have hybrid networks, so you can't count on high-speed networks. And I think the Microsoft speakers this morning talked about the branch office and how Microsoft is also feeling the pinch of that branch office and how they're having issues with low-speed networks. You got to keep it simple. I didn't mention it, but backup is important. And I didn't mention it as well before, but compliance is important. And compliance there, I mean, in the United States especially, there are things like HIPAA, which is a health compliance policy. I don't know too much about the details in the United States. In Canada, we have something called PIPEDA, which is a privacy policy. So every small business has to follow these policy rules, and we have to build software, including Samba, that follow these compliance rules. Some of these rules are really asinine, but most of them, you just have to follow them whether you like them or not. And there's implicit issues here, like robustness and security. I'm not going to talk about VPN and things like that. That's just out of scope. So here we go, Samba LDAP to the rescue. So again, just a reminder, I know a little about a lot. So a little bit of on a lot of topics. So the following slides, I don't get into too much LDAP details. My original talk had a whole bunch of, little niggly details on LDAP, but this was really about, okay, what can I show to people that, so they'll understand what's required in the small business market. So we talked, Dirk talked about single sign-on. So single sign-on is something that is important to the small business market, but you have to be careful about the security implications of that. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. And then master replica. So LDAP, of course, I'm not going to go into the details of LDAP. You all know what LDAP does. We're going to really take advantage of the master and the LDAP, master and replica functionality of LDAP. So going back to our software company with the Maldives field office, the way we're going to implement it, just for this example, is the data center is going to have the master LDAP and the PDC. In reality, the PDC is going to go into the head office. But for this example, we're going to keep it clean. We have the three offices here. And for this, we're going to have a dedicated gateway because we really need that extra security. So it's going to be a firewall and VPN gateway. And we're going to have, of course, a dedicated file print server. You might have a mail server on there as well. And then my house, the GeekX house, or whoever who has that kind of technical infrastructure at their house as well, we'll try to sneak. We're going to make it an all-in-one server. There's no critical data on it. We're going to try to somehow sneak that into the infrastructure that we're going to suggest. So every one of these, so the master LDAP lives on this one in the cloud. So this is sitting in a data center somewhere, virtualized, or not virtualized if you want. They're all going to be connected via VPN of some kind. I'm not going to go into those details. And every one of these systems, there's two on each in every one of these locations, is going to have a LDAP replica. So in this LDAP replica is not just the Samba information, but there's OpenVPN information. There's SSL certificates that you might need. OpenVPN needs those. We're going to have FTP authentication, web proxy authentication, all sorts of stuff, good stuff. So one of the things that I'm a little worried about and is Samba 4. How are we going to integrate all this to Samba 4? I have no idea. And I want to take one brief moment to talk about the cloud. So the cloud, I'm just going to talk, let me just read this out. So this is from The Economist in April. So once inside, it is easy to see why, and The Economist is a magazine targeted at business users. Once inside, it is easy to see why. It is a huge data center full of thousands of servers, the super fast computers that dish up web pages and other data, stacked in metal racks and locked up in chain link cages. A powerful air conditioning system keeps the building from overheating. Several fiber optic cables connect to the internet, and backup diesel generators are ready to jump in should the power fail. Data centers like this are physically proof that software is becoming services that users can access via the internet rather than a program they run on their computers. A year ago, cloud services and their provider were all the rage in the computer industry. venture capitalists threw money at them. This is right out of The Economist. So this is the kind of stuff that, you know, CIOs and stuff are hearing. And this is from April 12, 2001. The only thing I changed was I changed ASP to cloud. And so one of the things that bothers me, and probably because I'm too close to the industry, is the word cloud. The cloud has always been around. The data center has always been around. And people start using the word cloud or Web 2.0, all sorts of different memes. So if the word cloud bothers you because it's been around for a long time, it bothers me even more. But I still use it because it does its job. So if you hear the word cloud coming onto me and makes you cringe, I'm there with you. This is a bit of an architecture overview. I can skip over this slide. So now I'm going to get into some of the details. And please stop me. This is all kind of what we've done so far with Clark Connect is basically implemented a basic LDAP system. We've integrated Samba to a certain degree. And this is brand new. So this is even out in the kind of the wide world yet. It's in a public beta right now. And we're kind of looking for what can we do in the small business market. And this is just how we've laid out things. So this is just a general overview of what the LDAP layout looks like. We're going to go into these details a little bit more. So we have an access log. So that's for the compliance part. So basically all the access, if you change a password, goes into the access log. That's built into OpenLDAP. We have a couple of things, internal and collab. I'll talk about that in a second. You have your standard accounts, computers, groups, users, ID map, servers I'll talk about, and of course the Samba domain name. So the user object, nothing too exciting here. The two things I really want to point out here is passwords. So one of the things is there are password policies in Samba, or really Windows. So you can set maximum length, minimum length, when it expires. There are password policies in POSIX. So the shadow system has its own password policies. And then, of course, OpenLDAP has its own password policies as well. So one of the issues we came up with is, well, how are we going to get all these password policies talking to each other? What happens when someone presses Control-Alt-Delete on the Windows system and changes their password? And the other thing I also wanted to mention about passwords is the single sign-on is dangerous to a certain extent, but it's required for small business. Even though the web interface or the interface that the administrator looks at, you'll see a single sign-on password, the system's actually architected that every single service has its own password field. So when you set a password for a user, really setting a password for the VPN parts, portions of it, you're setting a password for the web proxy. So each of those fields are set, and it's set at the API level. You may come to a point where, or come to a service that you maybe don't want to have single sign-on, or you don't trust a third party. So one of the things that you'll see in a future product, in fact, later this year, is integration into Google Apps. So when you go to the Clark Connect, so you install your Clark Connect software, you put it on a server system, you start adding users, one of the things you can do is say, hey, I have Google Apps for this small business enabled. And if it's enabled, when they create a user on the Clark Connect system, it'll also create a user on the Google Apps system. So you have to ask yourself, well, where's that password going to get stored? I'm going to send this password to Google Apps. Do I really want Google to have the same password information as it's in my LDAP system? Well, for a place, Google probably okay. I mean, you might trust Google enough, but it could be another third-party vendor that you maybe don't trust as much. So the system's designed in a way that you can break away from the single sign-on if you have to. So that's one of the things that came up. It's like, oh, let's be careful. And then the group object. Again, I don't want to get into too much technical detail. We have some built-in groups that map to your classic Samba built-in groups. We added a couple example groups there. The other unique thing about, this is one of the unique features. So we have a master, so in the section of the LDAP tree, we have something called servers. So in this servers list, there's only one here, but really there should be a server, an entry for every single server that's in our office network. So we have one for the Maldives, one for Boston, one for Toronto, one for my house. And basically, it's a place to store information on each of those servers. And really, the only information that's stored right there right now is its IP information. And the reason for that is there's going to be points on the master node where you're going to have an update of some kind. I've updated a user or I've done something, and I want to contact my client nodes, all my other nodes in the network, in some synchronous kind of way. So you really have two options to go forward. So you can have the synchronous master contacts the client, or you can have the clients kind of polling, doing whatever they have to do to create the update. So the reason we have the clients and all the servers in the network listed in our LDAP tree is to make sure we can do things synchronously and asynchronously. So there are some other objects in the LDAP tree, and again, the first version of this presentation, I went into all sorts of detail, but I really don't think it's useful. But I'm going to mention them here just for completeness. ID map. So John has helped us a great deal. So John Terpstra has helped us a great deal on getting these things done, and WinBind and ID map and all sorts of things are things that we're struggling with, and John's helping us with. But it's certainly scary when someone like John Terpstra starts saying things about WinBind that makes him scared as well. So if John's scared about it, we are doubly scared about it. Of course, you have the computers part of the LDAP tree. That's where your computers are stored for PDCs, Samba domain. Colab and internal. Has anyone heard of Colab? I figured maybe in Germany we might have heard of Colab. Colab is a groupware software that was developed in Germany. And basically, it offers some of the same features as any groupware, shared calendars, shared contacts, and things like that. And so basically, Colab, just like Samba, is integrated into our LDAP setup. Colab is also integrated, so that's why you'll see these kind of internal and Colab objects floating out there. And this is a problem not just with Colab or with Samba. Anytime we add an application into the LDAP layer, there's going to be some integration work. And one of the things we had a lot of trouble with is, a lot of applications really want to take control of LDAP. And I haven't read enough about Samba 4, but I have a feeling it might be the same case there as well. So a couple of years ago, we were trying, what groupware application can we use? And there's like Zimbra. Has everyone heard of Zimbra? So Zimbra is a groupware application, and they have their own kind of LDAP setup. And integration into their LDAP was almost impossible because they have their own way of doing things and their own setup, and it was just difficult. Anytime you add a new application that's kind of LDAP enabled, you have to think about how to do the LDAP integration. So there's the group mappings. So that's kind of the overall architecture of what we've done, or what we're going to do, really. So as it stands today, Samba and our current version isn't even integrated, doesn't even have LDAP. Our new version, which should be out in a month or two, does have a pretty basic and solid framework. There's no replica features yet, and we're hoping just to kind of move forward with the product and move forward with Samba and LDAP and take it to the new level. We really are excited about all the possibilities and the innovation that can take place in that particular market, the small business market. We're not really stuck at all with some of the things that enterprise markets are stuck with, and there's really an opportunity. So these are just some of the things that we kind of have to think about. Auto mount, it might be a fancy way, and this is pie in the sky kind of things. Auto mount might be used. Is everyone here familiar with auto mount and how it works? Or basically, it could be used to have home directories kind of appear in different locations in our network. It's kind of a hokey pokey way of saying that. But local and global groups. So one of the things we struggled with when we were figuring out how to design something like this for our software company was, okay, how much control are we going to give the system administrator in the R&D office? How much control are we going to give the system administrator who manages the master node? So one of the things you can think of is, well, the master node, you're going to create all your users and all your groups, but they're not going to be able to do anything in terms of configuring the other boxes in the node and the network. So for instance, you can have a user Peter and you can have a user John and a group, you know, developers. But on the R&D boxes in Toronto, well, that's fine. You have a bunch of users, but they can't do anything until the admin in Toronto says, well, I'm going to have VPN set up and I'm going to allow the developers to access the VPN in Toronto. That gives control to the administrator at each location, which is probably what we want. The other thing we did talk about was giving control at the data center. So here, you can, with that option in mind, the person at the data center can say, okay, I'm going to create user Peter, I'm going to create user John, and I'm going to create the developer group, and at the same time, I'm going to tell this box down here in Toronto, I'm going to enable VPN for these guys. The nice thing about that is you can do everything in the data center. The bad thing about that is you have to build a whole bunch of extra software, and the admins in the local office lose control. So hopefully our architecture will be able to do both. We've decided for now to let the administrator have control of each of these devices and only have the username, passwords, and groups and all those policies set at the master node. And that's pretty much it. There were some other things. There's tons and tons of integration points. So when you're talking about Clark Connect at the end of the day is integrating all these different pieces of software, and all of them have their own authentication schemes, and it's really a job to kind of put them all together. And so, you know, printing in cups is just another one of those integration points I was going to talk about, but I don't really have to. I don't think it's worthwhile. And that's pretty much the end of the discussion. I'm going to make one comment about John, and why is John's name on the speaker list, and why is this thing called Central Point on the meeting notes? So Clark Connect has a bunch of OEMs. So this is the story about why the relationship with John and I. Clark Connect has a bunch of OEMs. So basically, they take our software, and they'll put their logos on it, and they usually add, you know, something to the software, a lamp stack, or for instance, there's a company in France that provides, they're a graphic design company, and they provide graphic designers help in publishing their files. So graphic designers typically have very large files, and you can't send them as email attachments. So what they do is they put one of these boxes into a graphic designer's location, and they've built on top of Clark Connect an application that helps them move files around for them and their clients. So that's just an example of how, you know, companies have OEM'd Clark Connect. One of the companies in the United States is called DirectPoint, and they have a product called CentralPoint. It's no secret that CentralPoint is really an OEM version of Clark Connect. And last summer, John did some work with CentralPoint, and of course, that trickled down to us. DirectPoint was the OEM, and they were asking for all sorts of features. They wanted this and this and this for file and print services. And of course, our answer to DirectPoint was, well, we don't really know much about we don't have enough meat and potatoes in our company to really fulfill all those features. So this is where John came in and started working with DirectPoint and by proxy working with Point Clark Networks. So really, the main driver of Samba LDAP on Clark Connect is really from our OEM DirectPoint and John. So John's really helped us kind of put all those pieces together. And again, I'm just the guy that tries to pull all of them together, and I do my best. Jack of all trades, master of none. And that's the end, if you have any questions.
Can you explain what your flex share is and what you've done with the SAM configuration on the flex share?
Yeah. So flex share is basically a way of creating a share. So I wish I had a screenshot of it, but when you want to create a Samba share or any kind of share, you go to the flex share interface and you say, I want to create a share directory for the development team. So when you create the share directory, it not only creates the Samba share for it, it also creates FTP access if you need FTP access for it. It also gives you an opportunity to do web access, so you can give web access to that share. So for example, I use this for my Geekbox at home. I have a media share, which has things like Dora the Explorer and all sorts of other stuff on it. And at times, I'll need to get that media information through the web, just download it easily. So with FlexShare, I just create a media share. It's a Samba share as well, and it's also a share that I can have on the internet that I can download items off. So FlexShare is just kind of a unique way of packaging a share. So it's not only Samba related, but it's also FTP and web related. It creates all sorts of problems in terms of access control and things like that, but that's what we've done. It's very simple. So there's no fancy access control lists. You know, you basically have a flex share, a group can read and write to it, and that's it. And that's just forced at the application level. It's not. And again, it's just to keep things simple. In our first iteration of FlexShare, we had all sorts of, we were thinking about doing access control lists. I'm from a VAX VMS. You know, my first job was in the VAX VMS world, so I was used to access control lists, and that's just the way I thought of file systems. But we stayed away from it, again, just to keep it simple. We wanted to keep it simple. And it's something that the small organization and small businesses understand. Okay, here's a group, here's a share. This group can write to that share, and that's that. It's very restrictive, but at the same time, very simple.
Any other questions?
No?
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Oh, thanks.